Hi everyone, thank you for coming to this talk. Before I get into my talk, I want to acknowledge and mention some of the people who are involved in this project in one way or another. The PR of this project is actually Rachel Noble from the Institute of Marine Sciences of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Mark Kirsch, Jane Blackwood, Ginger Kelly were involved in this project at different capacities. So the title of my talk is On-Site Wastewater Treatment Systems and their Impact on Surface Quality, Surface Water Quality in Eastern North Carolina. According to EPA estimates, one-fourth of U.S. homes use on-site wastewater treatment systems. These systems are also called septic systems to treat their wastewater and to dispose their wastewater as well. The problem is that these systems are suspected to be or thought to be among the major contributors of viral and bacterial pathogens to coastal and estuary systems. This potential problem is exacerbated along the eastern North Carolina due to high density of septic systems. Close to two-thirds of the residents in this part of North Carolina use these systems for wastewater treatment and disposal. And this region is also exposed to episodic heavy precipitation and large-scale climatic events. Add to that the very sandy nature of the soil in that area and the very high groundwater table. So this is a typical on-site wastewater treatment system. That's why I asked you that question, Russell. You're talking about the other treatment system. So this is a very traditional on-site wastewater treatment system. And the way it works is that the waste coming from the house is stored in a septic tank where the solid settles and the wastewater effluent flows to a distribution box. From the distribution box, the effluent flows by gravity to 3 to 4 leach lines, which are found usually in gravel trenches. So the wastewater is treated in the soil before it hits the nearby groundwater or surface water. So basically, the soil is a treatment unit. The soil is where the wastewater is treated before it gets into the surrounding water bodies. Of course, the problem is wastewater leaking from these systems, especially when the systems fail or during extreme climatic events such as hurricanes and nor'easters. The leakage from these systems can represent significant health risk to those using nearby contaminated water for shellfish harvesting and recreational purposes. One example is Newport River in eastern North Carolina, which is found in the White Oak River Basin. So this river estuary has a restricted shellfish harvesting, is restricted for shellfish harvesting activities because water samples from this estuary exceed the fecal coliform standard set by EPA. So we are not exactly sure what the different sources of contamination are, but you know, we can at least say that the source of contaminations include both point and non-point sources. And the fact that this area has high groundwater table, sandy soil, and a very high density of septic system, we are very interested in looking at what the contribution of these septic tanks or septic systems is towards the contamination of this river estuary. So the overall project goal was to kind of quantify the contribution of the on-site septic system towards the contamination of this river estuary. So more specifically, we were interested in quantifying and comparing microbial contaminants, mainly by focusing on fecal indicators, total coliforms, E. coli, and nitric oxide from the failing and the normally functioning systems. We are also interested in studying or comparing, contrasting the fate and transport of microbial contaminants by using tracers, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more, both chemical and biological tracers in the normally and failing septic systems in that area. The third objective, which was part of the overall project, which I'm not going to talk about today, was to repair, after doing the first batch of experiments, it was to repair the failing systems and redo all the experiments, all the measurements, in an effort to see if this repair of the failing systems is correlated with the improvement or the restoration of surface water qualities in that coastal areas. So So we chose a total of four septic systems, two of which were failing and two of which were properly working. And these sites were chosen in areas which were adjacent to creeks or tributaries of the Newport River estuary. We used the IDEX kits, which were the ColiAlert 18 and InterAlert to quantify total coliforms, E. coli, and enterococci. I will be focusing on E. coli and enterococci because they are better indicators of fecal contamination as compared to total coliforms. And we also saved or filtered some water samples for characterizing the microbial contaminants to do source tracking work on the water samples. I don't have the result for this part, but we are working on it and we have some. So these are the two on-site septic systems that we're working and that we monitored. And these are the other two septic systems which were failing. So all the systems serve single family homes and which were built between 1990 and 1995. And they were occupied during the study period. And what we did was we installed a set of a network of ground monitoring wells around the distribution backs, the leach lines, and the nearby surface waters to try to capture the movement of the waste from the system to the surrounding environment. So you can see the different monitoring wells, which are numbered as well. If you can see white PVC tube, that's the monitoring well. They were 4 inches deep, 4 feet deep into the ground. And to avoid any preferential pass flow, we maintain at least a minimum of 2 feet separation between the leach line and the nearest monitoring well. These two graphs or figures show you the locations of the four on-site septic systems that we monitored and their proximity to high-resource surface waters, such as shellfish harvesting beds or creeks and marinas, which were tributaries to the Newport River estuary system. You can see set 1, 2, and 3 were very close to a bunch of shellfish harvesting beds, and site 4 was close to marina. So all these sites were within the Newport River estuary, which was restricted, whose use as a shellfish harvesting area has been restricted because of high fecal contamination. This is the first batch of results that I'm going to show you. So the two figures are show you E. coli levels in ground and surface waters near the septic systems we monitored. So the E. coli result on the left, figure is for the E. coli result for the working systems. The right figure is for E. coli levels for the failing systems. So if you focus on the level of E. coli associated with properly working systems, you see the E. coli levels in the groundwater samples, which were very close to the properly working systems, were below detection, basically, in all the monitoring wells, which tells you that if the system is working, it's very effective in treating the waste before it hits the groundwater. But we saw elevated levels of E. coli in surface water samples, which were taken from locations very close to the working systems. So this was a clear indication that there were other sources of contamination apart from the septic tank, which were affecting the quality of the surface water around it. And since we are still working on source tracking analysis, I can't for sure tell you, but I can speculate there are wild and animal, domestic animals are also responsible. We might have some indigenous E. coli populations in that area as well. If you look at E. coli levels in groundwater samples, which were taken from locations very close to the failing systems, they were very high, especially as compared to E. coli levels in groundwater samples, which were very close to the properly working system. This is not a surprise. The systems were failing, they were leaking wastewater, so they are affecting the groundwater right below the systems. We also saw elevated levels of E. coli in the surface water samples, which were close to the failing systems. Again, it's not a surprise. But it's a consistent pattern. It shows you, it tells you the presence of other sources of contamination in the area apart from the septic tank. These figures are for enterococci levels in ground surface waters near the septic systems we monitor. So basically, the enterococci data also told us the same story, which is in groundwater samples, which were very close to the properly working systems, enterococci levels were very low. We only detected in few of the wells and at a very low concentration. But we saw elevated levels of enterococci in the surface water samples, which were close to the working systems. Again, the presence of other sources of contamination. If you look at samples close to the failing systems, there were very high concentrations of enterococci in groundwater samples, which were very close to the failing systems. Again, no surprise, these are failing systems. High levels of enterococci in surface water samples close to the failing system. So this is very consistent to the results to the E. coli results we saw previously. So the two take-home messages from the E. coli and the enterococci results are that when the systems are working, they are very effective in treating the waste before it hits the groundwater. And when they are failing, they are, of course, affecting the quality of the groundwater below them. But we can't for sure say the failing systems were affecting the nearby surface waters because of the presence of other sources of contamination. So the second part of the project was to use rhodamine dye and MH2 virus to compare and contrast the fate and transport of contaminants through the system. What we did was we put or inoculated or added the tracers, both rhodamine dye and the MH2 virus, into the distribution bags, and we monitored or followed their movement from the systems to the nearby water bodies by looking for them in monitoring wells, ditches, marinas, and other surface bodies. And we used a fluorometer and a traditional plate counting technique for quantifying the dye and virus in the water samples. So this is the first results for the tracer study from the rhodamine. You can see the rhodamine concentration in the distribution bags decreased steadily for the working systems, which basically tells you the wastewater was being pushed through the system properly. We didn't detect any rhodamine in the monitoring wells, which were away from the properly working systems, but we detected the dye in monitoring wells, which were very close to the distribution bags. The same data for site 3, where we had one of the failing systems. What's different is that the dye decreased initially in concentration in the D-bags, but it stabilized at significantly high concentration after some time, which is a confirmation of the fact that the system was backing up. It was not working properly. And we also detected the dye in two monitoring wells, which were a bit farther from the distribution bag, so basically telling us that the system is leaking. This result is from the virus tracer study at site 1, where we had one of the properly working systems. Again, similar to the dye, the virus concentration decreased steadily over time in the distribution box, telling us the system is working properly and the wastewater was being pushed through the system the right way. We didn't detect the virus in almost all of the monitoring wells around, except in one at a very low concentration. The same data for site 3, where we had one of the failing systems, very similar to the dye study. We had initial decline in the concentration of the virus in the D-box, but it stabilized over time at a very high concentration, around 4 log PFU per 100 ml, again showing you that the system was backing up. We also detected the virus at a very high concentration in two monitoring wells, which were a bit farther away from the monitoring well, again telling you the system is leaking, which is not surprising. But what's surprising was that we were not able to detect either the dye or the virus in the surface waters around the filling systems. So in conclusion, we saw that enterococci and the E. coli levels were higher in locations which were close to the failing systems. But when you have rainfall, that's a different story. Locations which were close to both failing and properly working systems were being affected. elevated E. coli levels and Staphylococci levels in the surrounding surface waters were indications that there were other sources of contamination. And we can't for sure conclusively say that the surface water, the failing systems were a major source of contamination for the surface waters around it. And we are still working on the source tracking analysis. Thank you for your patience.
Some time to ask some questions at the end.